Sweet Billy got picked on at school for things he couldn't change. He tried his best to play it cool, but in the seventh grade, you either fit right in or you don't fit. That's just the cold hard truth. I wish that I'd have been the friend that Billy never knew. I think it's time we come together, you and I can make a change. Maybe we can make a difference, make the world a better place. Look around and love somebody, we've been hateful long enough. Let the good Lord reunite us till this country that we love's undivided.
Welcome back. Top of the second hour of today's Road Warrior Radio broadcast is Friday, June 23rd, 2023. We are investigating, we are continuing and concluding today our investigation of the American Revolutionary slogan, resistance to tyranny is obedience to God. Is, and Mike in Kentucky's question last Friday, is this slogan biblical? And so, earlier this week, I mentioned the actual slogan is rebellion to tyrants is obedience to God. It's been bent slightly, I think, which throws us off the trail. We've come back to the original, and we are investigating origins, compliments of J.L. Bell's series of posts back in 2019, his week-long series of posts concerning this slogan, Bradshaw's epitaph, as it's known. And in Bradshaw's epitaph, the concluding line, rebellion to tyrants is obedience to God. We're exploring the origins of this. And why are we doing this? Why is this so important? I think there are many... so we began today's broadcast with... I read an excerpt from Edward Bernays's Propaganda, published back in 1928. And the manipulation of the group mind, which was not a new practice in 1928 when Edward Bernays published his book. It is a practice indeed that dates to antiquity, but has been scientifically refined in more recent centuries, you know, decades, generations, centuries. And so maybe we should be investigating some of the things that are going on around us and some of the slogans that are circulating. And we are besieged all around us by efforts to manipulate us and persuade us, influence and persuade. And there are perhaps innumerable, countless examples that we could cite, especially coming out of the COVID shenanigans. You know, vaccines are safe and effective, except they're not. There is every indication that maybe we should be more cautious. But why is there such an overwhelming effort to propagandize people to believe that you shouldn't ask questions about the COVID vaccines, for example? Or for that matter, what about the PCR test that was adopted immediately as a means of determining whether a person had this thing or not, when the inventor of the PCR test, Kerry Mullis himself, said that it was not equipped to be used as such? Guy who invented it said that it can't be used that way. It wouldn't be of any use. And along the way, Anthony Fauci even said that over about 30 cycles of amplification, you're going to get nothing useful, and that was exactly what was going on along the way. So there are slogans and things that we've heard in modern times that perhaps we should investigate more closely and maybe question in the same sort of way, you know, is this slogan or that slogan biblical? So maybe we'll come back to that. But for now, we're going to conclude with J.L. Bell's series of posts back in 2019. The next, titled, "It Is to My Own Knowledge a Modern Composition." Again, this is a quote to open his post. So Bell writes, "Brian Edwards, 1743 to 1800, inherited several slave labor plantations in Jamaica in 1769. He became a leading legislator there, then returned to Britain to run for Parliament. It took a while, but he finally secured a corrupt seat in 1796. In the House of Commons, Edwards was a voice for the interest of Caribbean planters, meaning he supported freer trade with the new U.S. of A. and opposed any move that limited slavery. Edwards also wrote histories, essays, and poems about the Caribbean. In 1793, he published The History, Civil and Commercial, of the British Colonies in the West Indies, which took note of Bradshaw's epitaph, as published in London 13 years earlier. And here's the excerpt. It is reported also that remains of President John Bradshaw were interred in Jamaica, and I observe in a splendid book entitled Memoirs of Thomas Hollis an epitaph which is said to have been inscribed on a cannon that was placed on the president's grave. But it is, to my own knowledge, a modern composition. President Bradshaw died in London in November 1659 and had a magnificent funeral in Westminster Abbey. Bell continues, several later historians have cited that passage as showing that Brian dismissed the whole story of Bradshaw's epitaph, that the regicide's remains were never ever brought to Jamaica, that there was a cannon placed as a monument to him, that the lines were genuine. And so Bell concludes, I think that interpretation missed a crucial detail. Edwards didn't cast doubt on the epitaph by, for example, saying he had walked all over the Martha Bray Hill, where that cannon supposedly stood, and saw no such thing. Instead, Edwards wrote that the epitaph was, quote, to my own knowledge, a modern composition. The only way, Bell writes, he could have had firsthand knowledge that the epitaph had been written recently was if he was somehow involved in the writing. Next up, the smoking cannon. And so the next entry is titled, "It was proposed to erect a cenotaph to the president's memory." Bell writes, "The quotable line, 'Rebellion to tyrants is obedience to God,' comes from a tribute to John Bradshaw, the member of Parliament who presided over the trial and death sentence of Charles I. And the search for the origin of that epitaph has led to a statement by Jamaican planter, politician, and historian Brian Edwards in 1793 that it was, to my own knowledge, a modern composition, quote unquote. What knowledge was Edwards referring to? We find the answer in George Wilson Bridges' Annals of Jamaica, published in 1828. That book quoted a letter from Edwards, then in the possession of a branch of the ancient and respectable family of the Bradshaws, who possessed property at Chipping Sodbury in Gloucester, quote unquote. And Bell adds parenthetically, "And what source is more dependable than the landed gentry of Chipping Sodbury?" So the letter from January 13, 1775, "My dear sir, I have great pleasure in obeying your commands in regard to the epitaph I told you of on John Bradshaw. The circumstances of his burial in Jamaica are said to be these. The president died in England a year before Cromwell. His son James Bradshaw, seeing from the great general spirit which began to prevail that the restoration of the royal line would probably take place on the Protector's death, and being well assured on that event that such of the late king's judges as should be then living could have little hopes of safety, was apprehensive that even the grave would not protect his father's ashes from insult. And having many friends and relatives among Cromwell's soldiers who had lately settled in Jamaica, on the conquest of that island from the Spaniards, he embarked thither with his father's corpse, which the soldiery on his arrival interred with great honor on a very high hill near a harbor now called Martha Bray, and placed a cannon on the grave by way of memorial. James's apprehensions were very well grounded. For the Parliament on the Restoration ordered the bodies of Cromwell, Ireton, and Bradshaw to be dug up and hung up at Tyburn, a foolish and impotent mark of vengeance, which, however, the remains of Bradshaw, through the pious care of his son, fortunately escaped. Certain it is that the body of Bradshaw could not be found in Westminster Abbey, where it was supposed to be buried. Such is the tradition which prevails in Jamaica. But though I always entertained a great respect for the memory of this distinguished person, as well as from the firmness and ability which he displayed on the king's trial, as from his uniform conduct and steady virtue in his opposition afterwards to the tyranny of Cromwell, yet I should have treated the tradition as wholly fabulous, had not a gentleman of strict honor and veracity now living in Jamaica assured me that in consequence of it he had caused a search to be made for the cannon said to be placed on the grave, which he actually found on the reputed spot. The place is now so entirely covered with wood that he believes no human footstep has trod there for a century past, and it is clear that a great exertion of human strength, which is seldom bestowed, voluntarily at least, in such a climate, on trivial occasions, must necessarily have been employed in placing the cannon where it lies. This gentleman was found also by searching the public records that the land was afterwards patented in the name of James Bradshaw. On this concurrent testimony, it was proposed to erect a cenotaph to the president's memory, and the lines which I repeated to you were intended by way of inscription, a copy of which you have herewith. I wish this account may give you satisfaction, being with great regard, etc., etc., Brian Edwards. So Bell writes, that shows why Edwards was confident in calling the epitaph a modern composition, quote unquote. Not one from the late 17th century, when Bradshaw was reportedly reburied on Jamaica. He had been witness to its creation. Edwards used the passive voice to disguise who actually came up with the idea of a cenotaph and the lines to be put on it. Parenthetically, Bell writes, was proposed, were intended. I suspect he was following 18th century genteel etiquette and not taking credit for himself, while at the same time placing himself so close to the action that anyone could guess he was deeply involved. I'm not the first to reach that conclusion. In Monumental Inscriptions of the British West Indies from the Earliest Date, published in 1875, J.H. Lawrence Archer called the lines a, quote, spurious epitaph written by the historian Edwards, end quote. But American historians have credited the epitaph to Benjamin Franklin. Next up, going deeper into Edwards' 1775 letter. And I would add, and beyond. And so the last installment in Bell's week-long series from 2019, May 3rd to May 10th, 2019. This one titled The Full History of Rebellion to Tyrants is Obedience to God. The epitaph for John Bradshaw that Brian Edwards sent to another gentleman in January 1775, quoted yesterday, or in the last post I just finished, varies slightly but significantly from every other surviving example of Bradshaw's epitaph. All others have the same wording, though they differ in line breaks, punctuation, and capitalization, as was common at the time. Here are the differences between that set and the version Edwards supplied on the right, parenthetically. So the differences, point by point, six differences that Bell lists. And line by line, he writes the distinction. Ere thou pass, contemplate this cannon and marble. Despising alike the pageantry of courtly splendor versus what the world calls greatness. Who, fairly and openly versus openly and fairly adjudged. Charles Stuart, tyrant versus king of England. Thereby presenting to the amazed versus astonished world. And finally, and never, never versus never forget. Bell writes, the weightiest difference is the first. Most versions describe the epitaph as already carved on the cannon that mark Bradshaw's grave. So he's saying the weightiest difference is the first, i.e. the difference between contemplate this cannon and this marble. Obviously, there's a distinct difference. Edwards' January 1775 letter instead describes a cannon planted near the grave over a century before and proposed a cenotaph of marble, which hadn't actually been created. Bell writes, I suspect, therefore, that the epitaph never was engraved on metal or stone, and that all the reports that it actually had been carved were too wishful. The monument never got past the planning stage. Bradshaw's epitaph always and only existed on paper. Edwards' letter doesn't give a date for when the epitaph was composed, but it seems to have been a few years before 1775. The letter refers to a moment when Edwards repeated those lines to his correspondent, showing that he was spreading them around. He may also have revised the lines since first distributing them, which would account for the difference between this version and the one that circulated before appearing in print in Philadelphia months after the letter. Samuel Johnson defined the word cenotaph to mean, quote, a monument for one's burial elsewhere, end quote. In using that word in his letter, Edwards accepted that Bradshaw's remains hadn't actually been buried on Martha Bray in Jamaica. It's interesting to put the 1775 letter alongside Edwards' remarks about the Bradshaw story in his 1793 History, Civil and Commercial of the British Colonies in the West Indies. Together, they suggest that he had become even more dubious that Bradshaw's dust, quote-unquote, was ever brought to Jamaica. Edwards also appears to have grown less excited after the American War and the early French Revolution about the whole notion of rebellion to tyrants. And I would just perhaps add here, maybe the damage was done, so to speak. Maybe the moment had passed that, this phrase had seen its effect. And maybe there was less need for excitement because the deed was already in motion. Stick around. We'll be right back after this short break.
Hello, hello, hello from beautiful Colorado. My name is Samuel Jung Kay, and I am currently the lead Shilajit hunter and master herbalist for Colorado Shilajit Company. In this video series, I will be discussing what we believe is the greatest of all adaptogenic superfoods and the single greatest natural healing remedy gifted to us by Mother Earth. I think you too will become as excited by this incredible substance called Shilajit as we were and are after our discovery of this amazing gift right here in beautiful, colorful Colorado. You may already know Shilajit by other names: Shilajit, Momio, Momi, Mami, Mineral Pitch, Asphaltum, and others. Shilajit literally translates to destroyer of weakness and conqueror of mountains. Shilajit has been in use for thousands of years and is considered as the highest valued cure-all of any earthly substance.
Look for the gold mountain and medical symbol logo in banners on republicbroadcasting.org to watch the full video and see more information. Use code GORBN when ordering. That's GORBN.
I'm so excited to have you as part of the Wild Pastures family, and we look forward to bringing you the pasture-raised meats that you and your family will love. Now, we started Wild Pastures because so many of my clients would tell me they just couldn't find high-quality pasture-raised meats, and even when they did, it was so expensive that they couldn't afford to eat it regularly. Now, I'm not talking about the bottom-of-the-barrel healthy meats that have claims like natural or free-range or even cage-free, terms that were actually created by the industrial food industry to make us feel all warm and fuzzy about buying their low quality products. I'm talking about truly nourishing pasture-raised meats, the kind that you'll never really find in a grocery store. Our farmers are doing things beyond organic. Our beef is 100% grass-fed and grass-finished and raised on pastures free from chemicals and other pesticides. Our chickens are 100% pasture-raised, where they get their natural diet of grass and forage and insects. We will never settle for free-range, which is actually one of the most deceptive terms in the chicken industry. In fact, less than 0.1% of the chicken consumed in the United States is truly pasture-raised in the way that ours is. And our pork is 100% pasture-raised as well. So if you care about where your food comes from, then you have definitely made it to the right place. As a Wild Pastures member, you'll be supporting the most highly principled farmers in America and getting the most nutrient-dense, nourishing, and sustainable meats in the world. But I'm confident you'll love being part of our mission at Wild Pastures, and you will really love the delicious, nourishing meats that we're going to deliver straight to your door.
Visit republicbroadcasting.org and click the Wild Pastures banner ad. Secure a shipment today. Beef, poultry, and pork. Raised the way nature intended.
To finish our investigation, by the way, it's interesting to note that J.L. Bell on his blog, boston1775.blogspot.com, has 319 posts that are tagged propaganda. And I don't know, maybe at some point we'll return to that. I think that, you know, independent thinking people, you know, it's that, again, it's back to Kurzweil's focus on visual pattern recognition and long-term memory. Why? Because you can spot these kinds of things. So to conclude, J.L. Bell's The Full History of Rebellion to Tyrants' Obedience to God. Bell concludes, this then is my hypothesis of the origin story for the line, rebellion to tyrants is obedience to God. The sentence was coined by Brian Edwards and perhaps some friends on Jamaica in the early 1770s as part of a tribute to the English Republican John Bradshaw. Edwards and possibly his friends shared the epitaph in letters to other parts of the British Empire, including Annapolis and London by 1773. Thomas Hollis copied that the epitaph into his historical collection by 1774, believing that it had already been engraved on a cannon in Jamaica and posted in houses in many other American colonies. Benjamin Franklin copied the epitaph and brought it to the Second Continental Congress in 1775, showing it to Thomas Jefferson and others. Those men believed that the epitaph was a relic of 17th century English republicanism. Franklin or a colleague supplied the epitaph to the printers of the Pennsylvania Evening Post in December 1775, and it was finally put into print. Jefferson entertained doubts about the epitaph's authenticity in the mid-1770s, but eventually accepted it and used it, its final line, as a motto. Meanwhile, Edwards had come to doubt the lore of Bradshaw's body and in 1793 tried to downplay the whole story in his History of the Caribbean. And Bell concludes, under this theory, Bradshaw's epitaph was at no point a deliberate hoax, knowingly passed on with false information, but people who liked the lines were too quick to assume that they had already been engraved at Martha Bray, then that they had been composed back in the 17th century. The man who knew the most about the real story, Brian Edwards, cast doubt on it in print without ever coming out and admitting his own role in launching the tale. The line, rebellion to tyrants is resistance to God, is thus not a creation of Thomas Jefferson nor a hoax by Benjamin Franklin. It's most likely a sincere product of the political movement in Britain's North American colonies resisting new crown measures in the 1760s and 1770s, but not on the mainland. And the image that he shows on that page actually doesn't display. It was linked, but a medal minted in by Virginia in 1780 to give to Native allies displaying the motto, rebellion to tyrants is obedience to God, which is, you know, the commenters note, it's interesting. One person comments, I suppose, no one in the Virginia government thought that Native leaders receiving those peace medals might take that motto to heart. Ironies abound. And that reminds me of the Afghan Mujahideen. So some things never change, it seems. And I think there is another possibility, which I have mentioned. I will talk about my own. There are a couple other things that I would include in this discussion. And I've mentioned them. I think that Manly P. Hall's The Secret Destiny of America, published back in 1944, is a helpful resource on this. And maybe I'll give you some hints at what I mean when we come back. We'll go to the phones and then we'll conclude this whole deal. Stick around. We'll be right back after this short break.
The truth.
You're listening to Republic Broadcasting Network. Real news, real talk, real people.
because you can handle the truth.
Standing 6'4", weighing in 245 pounds of crime-fighting, political science-analyzing brawn, ladies and gentlemen, Dr. Patrick Slattery.
So, Mike, get off this anti-cicada agenda.
I'm a born-again traditional Christian, and my favorite possessions are right here on my nightstand. That would be the King James Bible and my .357 revolver.
I'd rather be ruled by Chinamen than Jews.
Cool it with the anti-Semitic remarks, right?
Just because you steal an election and terminate the republic doesn't mean you terminate the people in the republic, because we're still here.
I'm not taking the vaccine. F*** you, Bill Gates.
There was a way forward still on January 6th. What needed to be done is to object to every single state.
The COVID-19 virus was the setup. The vaccine could very well be the bioweapon.
The Patrick and Jeremy Show, Tuesday at 9 Central and Wednesday at 1 Central.
Are you one of the millions of people who feel like there is a dark cloud hanging over their heads whenever they're using pharmaceutical drugs? For some, the short-term relief can turn into an opioid addiction nightmare. Have you ever wondered why CBD oil is a billion-dollar industry? It's because it works better than opioids and is actually healthy for you. However, CBD oil is stripped of all other helpful compounds found in the hemp plant. According to neuroscientists, the whole hemp plant, otherwise known as hemp paste, is even more effective than the chemically processed CBD oil. Are you ready to take back your health? You can try hemp paste for the price of a cup of coffee.
Hemppaste.com/RBN. Free shipping on orders over $50. See the banners for hemp paste at republicbroadcasting.org and visit hemppaste.com/RBN.
Find your inner rebel at Dixie Republic, the world's largest Confederate store, located in Travelers Rest, South Carolina. The anti-white, anti-Christ, anti-Southern world ends at the asphalt. Welcome to God's country. Log on to DixieRepublic.com to view our Southern merchandise, from flags to t-shirts to artwork. At the store, browse through our extensive collection of belt buckles and have a custom-made leather belt handcrafted in our Johnny Reb's Gun and Leather Shop. That's DixieRepublic.com, where you can meet all of your Southern needs.
Support those that support the network. Support Dixie Republic at DixieRepublic.com. Email proudsouthern123@gmail.com and let them know that RBN sent you.
Welcome back. Goodness sakes. All right. To wrap up and go to the phones, well, let me just say this. This is kind of Giovanni Baldelli and Social Anarchism on page 7, published back in 1971, wrote, "Rebellion," speaking of the question, you know, is this slogan biblical? "Rebellion presupposes the existence of oppression, And on the psychological plane, deification of rebellion creates an effective compact with oppression. The last thing I will say in conclusion, we'll go to the phones. Just a hint. I think, you know, I would return to Jefferson and the idea in Bell's second post, Saturday, May 4, 2019, titled All the Strength and Beauty of the Antithesis, which is from Jefferson's letter to Edward Everett, February 24, 1823, where Jefferson says, to explain my meaning by an English example, he's talking about syntax, and he says, I will quote the motto of one, I believe, of the regicides of Charles I, rebellion to tyrants is obedience to God. Correct its syntax, rebellion against tyrants is obedience to God. It has lost all the strength and beauty of the antithesis. What did he mean by that? And here's what I think. Speaking of syntax, think of this slogan this way. The slogan is rebellion to tyrants is obedience to God. Now, what if we insert two commas, one after rebellion and one after tyrants? So it reads, rebellion to tyrants is obedience to God. There's something to think about. And on that note, to the phones we go. James in Vancouver, thanks for calling. Welcome.
Right. Well, you've presented many PhD thesis questions here today, all the way from Edward Bernays to Fletcher Prouty to Bradshaw, Cromwell, constitutional law, and the motto. I was going to say that perhaps it might depend on the severity of the tyranny. In the was it the Revolutionary War, there were some atrocities, but the question I would ask is, when you take people and cheat them that there's a killer virus out there that doesn't exist, and then you inject them with a substance that will kill them, how bad is that? Back to you.
Well, that is the painful irony, no pun intended, but really, I mean, that is the ultimate weaponizing of this kind of dynamic, I think.
Yeah.
And the fact that people will fight to defend their right to do these kinds of things. I mean, this is, but you know, this all reminds me of Pike's letter to Mazzini. I've seen some things on social media recently, you know, I've really, as you know, I've tried to speak to kind of the meta level of context in these things. I've seen some things, you know, with like the pride parades and small towns and things, and people saying, you know, there's this person, you can look at their social media, they're openly worshiping Satan and this kind of stuff. And I want to, and I probably will on some of these things, I want to post what I've talked about on this broadcast. You know, for example, most Christians are being bent into communism and Satanism and doing what the Thelemites do, you know, do as thou wilt, and not understanding the distinction. And so, you know, I want to ask these people the question. Most Christians don't realize that, or so-called Christians don't realize that they are not much different. And so, you know, here's a question. Here's a litmus test. What's the difference between communism and Acts chapter 2? Discuss. Are they the same?
Go ahead.
Well, the idea that Pike writes that, you know, I mean, this old cliche that people will fight to protect their kidnapper and the ability to injure themselves and one another, which is what you're talking about. And that's, you know, ironically, that's exactly what the LeBons and Trotters and William James and Vunt and Skinner and you know, all these guys, I mean, they wrote about it exhaustively.
Right.
So if we can read and we have the internet, I mean, the irony is what you're talking about is it's free. It's all around us. It's, you know, just take a moment and you can read about it.
I was going to add that it's interesting, the Jack Nicholson piece from 1978 and being the Canadian Broadcasting Corporation, which at that time and before was a valid alternative media that was not clearly recognized at the time. Mm-hmm. CBC now has turned, I think, into a communist Elamite operation.
Yeah.
Although I don't listen to it anymore, but I'm guessing it has. So, mm-hmm. And I want to be able to. Yeah. Well, you see that this whole these questions I think are very important, and the guy of Bradshaw, they would, in my mind, they would have to get rid of his body because that period of Cromwell was called the period of darkness in my law books when I studied mm-hmm. law in England. They wouldn't even discuss it. It was blanked out in the constitutional law books. Not that the British have a constitution. They actually don't. And a lot of people don't know that either. I just thought I'd mention the atrocities and, sooner or later, people have to do something. And, whether it's biblical or not, I can't say because I don't have the, expertise. Of course, I've studied some of the Bible, but, anyway, thanks for taking my call, and I really appreciate your show.
Absolutely. Thank you, James. Much appreciated.
Right. Thanks now. Bye-bye.
As always. Let's see. Back to the phones. Quince in Florida, thanks for calling. Welcome.
I really enjoy your show, and I've gotten a great deal of edification from it. It's just fantastic, and I appreciate your time and effort because I know it must take a lot of time to put this stuff together.
Well, I don't know. That's kind of a relative thing, you know? I mean, there is time involved, obviously, but I think so much of the subject matter is it's all kind of related. And so there is time, there is preparation, but in a sense, you know, it's I don't know, like the jazz musician or something that because of all of the preparation that's been done previously can sit in on any set with, you know,
that's other folks. That's a great analogy because he's not, you know, he doesn't have to put it together. He just walks on stage, and the last 25 years of his life is going to be presented to the audience.
Yeah, exactly. And, you know,
impromptu.
Exactly. There's a similar cliche of the legal expert who, you know, somebody says, why did you charge me? And the short version of the story is, why did you charge me $500 to write a letter that took 10 minutes? And he says, you know, the background that gave the ability to write that in 10 minutes took 30 years. So that's why.
Well, that's well said. You mentioned a book called The New Abnormal, The Rise of the Biomedical Security State. And I always like to look in my local library for anything that I've become aware of just to see if I can check it out. And to my surprise, they had it. They had one copy in Brevard County, and I had to get it from Cape Canaveral. So I have it in my hands. I'm about halfway through it. I highly recommend your listeners get this book and put it in their library.
I'm not sure. Did I recommend it? Did I mention it? When was that?
I'm pretty sure you did. The New Abnormal, The Rise of the Biomedical Security State by Dr. Aaron Curiati.
Yeah. I'm familiar with it. I'm just not sure when I mentioned it.
It was a couple months ago.
Well, if you say so, then, you know, I'm not going to dispute it. I don't recall mentioning it, but maybe I do. Actually, you know what? I vaguely recall. Yeah.
Well, I'm putting it to good use.
The discussion.
And recommending it to the rest of the class.
All right.
Another great book is Tavistock Institute, Social Engineering the Masses by Daniel Estulin.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Daniel Estulin is an interesting figure. There are a lot of interesting things happening these days. And, you know, whenever somebody has a background, you know, like Daniel Estulin, for example, in, you know, counterintelligence, I think is what it was, and that kind of stuff, it's always interesting, you know. He is kind of the leading authority on the Bilderberg meetings, according to, you know, some folks. It's always interesting when that happens. I think, you know, whether intentionally or otherwise, you know, sometimes we look to someone like that, which, you know, like I was saying, intentionally or otherwise, sometimes that can end up being a kind of a limited hangout. It can function that way because we say this person is the expert. So, you know, in that sense, sometimes we trade one flavor of Kool-Aid for another, if that makes sense, where instead of really breaking out and thinking for ourselves and trying to, you know, follow the facts wherever they lead, we just trust that this person has gathered all the possible knowledge and information available, which I think can be short-sighted. Sometimes.
I agree with that. That's why I try to read through perspectives and then take the dots and try to connect them and look at stuff that is leading astray. And that just requires, you know, a lot of reading through different material. Like I just recently got the Deep State Encyclopedia by Really Gracefully. I haven't read it mm-hmm. yet, but it looks like quite a book. Information. She's done a lot of studies. So I read through these things and try to connect the dots and get a vision of what the hell's going on mm-hmm. myself.
Yeah.
And RBN is a big help for that. In closing, two other books I think are great are by Tex Mars, Codex Man, mm-hmm. and Mysterious Monuments.
Absolutely.
Huge pictorial books, and I think these should be in everybody's library, because once you whip that out and open it to any page and say, how did this get on a government building? Mm-hmm. Why is this satanic symbol on the front of a state or federal edifice? Mm-hmm. Why?
Yeah, absolutely. And Mysterious Monuments was a 20-year investigation, basically. And then, you know, you look, for example, at, I mean, more recent entries, you could point to the New Carlton Federal Building and say, why is there a pyramid out in front of it and a couple of things that look like Dr. Seuss arms with a finger pointing to the other hand and a black platform holding one hand and a white marble platform holding the other? What's that all about? And I mean, a lot of the sculptures and things that Tex Mars pointed to are, you know, people could sort of dismiss those things, but I think the New Carlton Federal Building is one of the more recent examples where, you know, like, what do the Dr. Seuss stands, the columns with the hands and the pyramid, what does that have to do with America exactly? And, you know, that, I think, is a great primer to when somebody says, well, what do they? Well, here's an 800-page book and 20 years worth of investigation where Tex Mars went around and photographed these things personally.
They're two excellent books.
Absolutely.
Really an eye-opener. And in closing, I recall when I was a youngster, maybe around 10 years old, I saw on a black and white TV the original version of Invasion of the Body Snatchers. And I'd seen all horror films and so forth. It's just fun, you know. Even at 10, you're like, yeah, that's make-believe. But when I got to the end of that film, the effects were really corny and stuff, but when I got to the end of it, I felt a chill that I still feel to this day. When that last guy was left, the entire populace of the city had been overtaken. And now I understand why I instinctively felt that chill.
Yeah.
Because I feel where he's at.
Yeah, absolutely.
Thank you so much,
Chris. You're welcome. Thank you, Quince. Much appreciated. Stick around, folks. We'll be right back after this short break.
My name is Don Wiskin, and at 42 years old, I suffered a massive heart attack, lost 35% of my heart to damaged tissue, and was supposed to spend the rest of my life on disability. What did I do? I took Extendivite, a garlic and cayenne mix of 7 herbs which rebuilt my heart and gave me back my life. For over 17 years now, I have made this formula available to you so you don't have to suffer the same thing I did. Clean your blocked arteries and strengthen your heart and boost your natural immune system. I'm 60 years old now and I still work every day. To get your Extendivite, call 1-877-928-8822. That's 1-877-928-8822 or visit heartdrop.com. Extendivite is only $69.95 for a 2-month supply of either capsules or liquid.
Extend your life with Extendovite.
Corporate media dominates the American opinion. Finding independent voices that counter this avalanche is becoming increasingly difficult. With the endless corruption running rampant throughout our government, independent voices are needed more than ever to battle the offensive against our freedoms and liberties. As a listener of RBN, no one understands this concept better than you. Now it's up to you to do your part. The time has come for you to take action and begin broadcasting the truth to hundreds or thousands of people every month. Sound impossible? Quite the contrary. With pointed slogans from LibertyStickers.com, you can reach countless sleeping Americans unaware that they live in a real-life wonderland. LibertyStickers.com has a huge inventory of political bumper stickers and messages that reflect the truth about our government, our politicians, and the future of America. With so many in stock, there's one perfect for you. Visit us today at LibertyStickers.com. Again, that's LibertyStickers.com. Do your part. Your voice is important. Let it be heard.
My name is John. I'm the founder of Blackout Coffee, and I started Blackout because I really love coffee. I've always loved coffee, and after traveling so much to Europe, South America, and trying so many different coffees that were so good, and every time I came back to the U.S., I was so disappointed with the coffee, so I figured that I had to do something about it. The biggest difference is on the beans and the roasting process, how we roast it, and how fresh it is. The fresher the roast, the better the quality. Here I have like all of the coffee. It's roasted within 1 to 2 days prior to being shipped. So it literally gets to consumers' house within 3 to 5 days after being roasted. If you like coffee, you have to try ours. It's fresh roasted. It's one of the best beans that we can get, and you will definitely see the difference.
Visit blackoutcoffee.com and use the coupon code REPUB10. That's REPUB10.
Birds flying high, you know how I feel. Sun in the sky, you know how I feel. Breeze drifting on by, you know how I feel. It's a new dawn, it's a new day, it's a new life for me. And I'm feeling good.
Welcome back. That's a perfect ending. I was thinking Invasion of the Body Snatchers during the break, thanks to Quince. And most people don't realize that there was a 1956 version starring Kevin McCarthy and Dana Winter. Most of us think of the 1978 version with a star-studded cast, Donald Sutherland, Leonard Nimoy, Jeff Goldblum, et cetera, et cetera. And that final scene, like Quince was talking about, if you've seen it, man, it's terrifying. And the realization that it's not actually the body snatchers so much as the mind snatchers. And what we've seen over the last few years, what Matthias de Smet has described to us as mass formation, you know, and this is something that's being popularized. I mean, for most of us my age and older, we grew up in an era when our parents said, you know, you say something stupid, all my friends are doing it. All my friends are doing it. All my friends are confused about their gender. Teacher told me in school and all my friends are doing it. And our parents said, if all your friends jumped off a bridge, would you jump too? And we realized in an instant how stupid what we were saying was. We've gone from that to now the complete inversion of that, where the bandwagon effect, which again is a logical fallacy. Traditionally, you know, when all of the lemmings are being buffalo jumped off the cliff, so to speak, maybe we shouldn't go along. That's the thing with the buffalo jumping. We're not good at the telephone game. We can't get message back from the edge of the cliff. Hey, it's a cliff. Bad idea. So it's, you know, a mass formation, mind snatching as much as anything that we're experiencing. And there is a magnetism to it. And this is the communitarian bent. You know, you have no identity apart from the mind snatching herd, even though that's the inversion of reality. And it's ironic because I think there's a very religious component to it, that being, you know, I mean, it kind of boils down to the words of Jesus saying, he who seeks to save his life will lose it. He who loses his life for my sake will find it. And so, you know, we're seeking an identity in the herd, which actually, ironically, is the most dehumanizing, depersonalizing thing we could possibly identify with and do. Anyway, this was the conclusion of the investigation of the question, is the American Revolutionary slogan resistance to tyranny is obedience to God, or more precisely or accurately, rebellion to tyrants is obedience to God? And I think that you can... you recognize my conclusion that no, it is not biblical. I would call it patently unbiblical. I hope you have a great weekend. I hope it was informative and perhaps edifying. As always, it truly is an honor and a pleasure. Take care. God bless. We'll catch you on the other side.
Tahibo Tea Club's original Pure Paudi Arco Super Tea comes from the only tree in the world that fungus does not grow on. As a result, it naturally has antifungal, anti-infection, antiviral, antibacterial, anti-inflammation, and anti-parasite properties. So the tea is great for healthy people because it helps build the immune system, and it can truly be miraculous for someone fighting a potentially life-threatening disease due to an infection, diabetes, or cancer. The tea is also organic and naturally caffeine-free. A one-pound package of tea is $49.95, which includes shipping. To order, please visit drinksupertea.com. The first word is drink, spelled D-R-I-N-K, then the word super, then the word tea. The complete website is drinksupertea.com, or call us at 818-965-9113, Monday through Saturday, 9 a.m. to 5 p.m. California time. That's 818-965-9113. DrinkSuperTea.com.
This is RBN, the Republic Broadcasting Network.